Welcome to Breaking the Underdog Curse for Chiropractors. Hosted by Dr. Don McDonald, author of the best-selling book, The Underdog Curse. We give vitalistic chiropractors a chance to learn from the best around the world, discovering how they overcame their challenges and achieved success. In order for chiropractic to thrive, we must have thriving chiropractors.
It ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Now listen up. It's time to crush the curse.
Hello, podcast listeners. I've had a lot of questions about the Vitality Shift. This is a program that my wife, Brandy McDonald, and I have created, and people are just asking more questions about how they learn about it and what kind of forms it comes in. And so what I want to just let people know is that you can do the Vitality Shift two different ways. We have an online program called the Vitality Shift, and you can find information at www.thevitalityshift.com. And the second thing is we do a live immersion day where we spend basically 8 hours going through the whole program, role-playing, helping to move your whole practice more towards a vitalistic model. We really work on communication, refining your premise, covering neurological objective findings so we can actually measure subluxation, and then going through care planning. And we realize that a lot of people are different and so people heal at different levels. We've created four different healing archetypes, which kind of help us when we're doing the care planning process and also on reevaluations. So if you're interested in that, we actually have two live immersion days right now planned, one for London, England in June and one for Perth, Australia in September. And if you're wanting to look at more information about that, check out our website, www.trueconceptseminars.com. Again, that's www.trueconceptseminars.com. And we'll also put down any other new locations that we'll be hitting. So if we get to run into you somewhere around the world, we'd love that. And I just want to take this opportunity to explain a little bit about our program. And now you can get back to the podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Breaking the Underdog Curse. This is Dr. Don McDonald, your host. And I am heading Eastern Canada again. I'm staying in Canada, and I'm interviewing one of our shifters. And he's one of the three people that we had a little fun contest in January where we had our project focused goals rather than outcome focused goals. And Dr. Max Saint-Denis was our winner. And he has a really cool story that I really wanted to share that I think a lot of people are going to get some good gems out of it. So welcome to the podcast, Mark.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. So you have a really interesting story because your dad was a chiropractor, right?
Yes.
And for those out there, I always like to think of the lesson before the podcast. And I think the lesson of this was I liked your term, getting the fire back in chiropractic. So that's kind of going to be our theme for this show is if you've got to the point where you sometimes felt like you've lost your fire, this is going to be a little awakening on how to get that fire back. So, Dr. Max, tell us a little bit about how you even got into chiropractic in the first place.
Oh, well, my dad was a chiropractor and I grew up in his office, always stopping by the office. I think my first job actually was cleaning the office during the weekends. So,
oh, right.
Yeah, then I graduated from developing my father's X-ray for him with the dark room, the solutions and everything.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah. So that's cool. I grew up with him around seeing my dad, you know, helping people, having patients come in, you know, with low back pain and coming back, standing up, walking from the clinic a couple of days later. So I always thought my dad was Superman growing up with doing all kinds of miracles.
Yeah.
And maybe more like 13, 14 years old, I really decided to become a chiropractor to follow in his footsteps. So that's where I got more serious about it and then went through CGEP, where you don't have to see, like the extra 2 years of high schools in Quebec. We don't have grade 12 or grade 7 in a primary school. So did CGEP and then went through Life University in Marietta, Georgia.
All right. Now, was there a turning point where you decided to be a chiropractor, or did it feel like you just always thought you were going to be one?
You know, it's funny because I have a picture. I'm like 4 or 5 in my private room that says my dad is my number one chiropractor. So, but yeah. Like I said, you know, 14, 15, there was not a turning point. It's just something that you know, lit up in me from probably seeing my dad helping someone and was like, okay, I want to do what he's doing. You know, I want to help people too. So.
Yeah. When you're you know, going through school and stuff, did you go to some seminars with your dad?
Yes. Actually, our family vacation were based around the Parker seminars. So,
cool.
So my dad was basically bringing us to Parker, and I was by the pool, and he was in class. So basically, but you know, I grew up around, you know, Dr. Jim's principles, and my dad always talking to us, my brother and I, that, you know, the Thursday afternoon session with Dr. Jim was the Parker seminar back then, and so I was always around chiropractors growing up. So, yeah, it was easy for me to follow the footstep and take over.
That's pretty cool. Now, how old were you when you did your first Parker seminar?
Okay. Basically, I think my mom was pregnant when I did my first.
That's awesome.
But probably 8 or 9 or 10, you know, as a walking human being at a Parker seminar. So.
That's really cool. Now, I know in Quebec, there was a real strong brown baggers group, right?
Yes,
out of Parker. Was he part of that? Yeah.
I was part of that. Now I'm no longer part of that group, but it's still going strong. They're probably the only original brown baggers club that's still going and hosting seminars every couple of years. I think now they're doing 2 or 3 seminars a year.
Okay.
Two.
And these are just stories I've heard. Didn't they all did they rent a plane and go down at some point, or did they just all go on the, did they?
Yeah, that's, actually they did. They did. At one time they rented a plane with a bunch of chiropractors from Quebec and they went to a Parker seminar. So I don't know the exact dates, but we did.
That's really cool. So that's interesting. So you head down to Life University, and what year did you start school?
I started in 1999 and graduated in 2003. Actually, I was part of the accreditation crisis that was going on at Life, and where the school went from like 2000 students to 300. And
jeepers.
But you know, my best time at Life was when we were only like 300, and the hardcore chiropractors at night going to different clinics and doctors hosting us for dinner and talking philosophy all night. And so those last couple of months at Life University were like the best months, you know.
That's cool. And so was that super stressful? So did that all start had you already started and then it happened like partway through?
I was almost to be done when it happened, but you know, talking with my dad, I knew it was like politics going on, and eventually we would find a loophole to graduate and allow the students to graduate, and that's what happened. So it was a matter of, you know, politics being played, and
yeah,
we're stuck in that place for a couple of months, but you know.
Yeah, and then it worked out, because that one must have been pretty wild to have 2,000 students at the school and then of like a mass exodus, and you basically had three, you said 300 were left?
Yeah, 300 were left. And you know, it's funny because thinking about it 15 years later, you know, we're talking about fear. Our fear can be paralyzing to us and can make us do a crazy decision. And, you know, looking back at it, you know, you can see that some, when you do actions as a reaction based on fear, you know, sometimes it's not the best decision. Those who just waited the course actually, you know, graduated and started practice, and they moved on, you know.
So it actually worked out better just to hang in there, even though things were a little bit rocky. Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. And so then when you, you graduated school, and you decided to go back to Quebec right away?
Yes. Actually, I had a contract with Life University that said basically if I was coming back to Canada, they were accepting payments in Canadian dollars. So, you know, so that was cool, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It's because at that time, you know, that was like the time it went to dollar, the Canadian dollar went down like to 62 cents, not like one of the lowest it went. So
I graduated in 97 and I was at Palmer, and the funny thing was, like, we weren't quite that low, but we were still in the upper 60s, probably 66 cents. But it was just crazy to get my student loan check from Canada, and then it basically gets divided in half.
Oh yeah, you know. My dad was sending me $1,000 a month, and that month I went $1,000 went down to 620, you know.
Oh, jeez. So we had to learn how to, like, get by with a little bit less, right?
Oh yeah. KFC for lunch and dinner for $2.99. That was
yours. Mine was the Wendy's Junior Burger.
I could get them for 50 classic cents. Classic.
Yeah, yeah. So I could get like four or five of them, and that would fill me up for the day, and it cost like $4.50 or something.
Good times.
Yeah. Well, and it's ironic because it's funny, as a Canadian going down to the States, a lot of times we have less ability to access funds,
yes,
which is horrible while we're down there, because a lot of the American students that I was with, they got tons of student loans. So they're going on holidays, they're buying cars, but they're all on borrowed money, right? And so the ironic thing was, I was kind of all grumpy and all upset because I couldn't afford to do anything when I was down there. But coming back with less of a student loan was a lot better.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Cool. So what did you do when you got back to Quebec? Did you open as associate, or did you open your own practice, or what happened?
First thing I did, actually, my dad, you know, said, as a graduation gift, I'm going to bring you to Parker, that was in Toronto in 2003. And he said, you know, I want you to sit in the first column from the program. You know, you do the first column of the program and you sit there. And if you do that, I'll pay for your seminar. I said, okay. And then my dad had a second office that he opened up a couple of years prior of me graduating. So I kind of did my proof there, or play around that clinic for a year and a half.
Yeah.
And then in 2003 at the first Parker seminar, he brought me to the GTO luncheon. And at that time I said, okay, I'm going to do a GTO, which was still seven seminars in a row at that time.
Yep.
And I finished my seven seminars in October of 2004 in Atlanta, Georgia, ironically. So where I graduated like a year later. Yeah. And then my dad got sick and died really, really, really fast, like a month later. And got sick 1 month, died 3 months later. So I basically took over the practice in 2005 all of a sudden, suddenly. And that's how I started.
Yeah. Well, that must have been horribly stressful.
Oh yeah.
How did you go through that? Because just imagine, like, because you're in practice with your dad, and then if he passes away, and then you have to go through the mourning of that, plus try to run a practice at the same time. How did you do that?
You know, I went into a business mode and totally shut off my emotions. You know, I was the one that was supposed to take over the clinic. I was the one that was taking the reins. So I was, and I went in and took over, basically went into a business mode and shut off a little bit my emotions to take over the clinic. And I did, you know, took over the clinic and been running the clinic ever since. You know, yeah. It's sometimes you have to do what you have to do, you know?
Yeah,
that's how I did it.
100%. And did you notice, like, when you have to shut off the emotions a bit, did you notice any kind of ramifications from that, like, after a few years of doing that?
Oh yeah. You know, I lost a little bit part of myself. You know, I was.
Yeah.
That's what I lost. I lost my emotions. I lost the part of myself, and I think it basically went to, like I said in my pre-interview with you, I crashed twice, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think when my daughter was born in 2007, that's where it hit me with a ton of bricks, basically. That's where I crashed. You know, I hold my daughter in my hand and I was like, okay, now I have a daughter, you know. I had a son in 2005 also, but I had a daughter. And when my daughter was born, I held her in my arms for the first time, you know. I think my emotion, you know, came back up, and okay. So
yeah,
you know, that's when I crashed. I crashed in 2007 because of that.
Well, and I find this too, you probably notice, is if you try to like block out some bad emotions, you also block out the good emotions too, right? Because you kind of numb yourself. And then it, probably at that moment, you know, just, I've never had a child, but I can imagine the pause or the good emotions click on, but then it also clicks on the bad ones again. So you're kind of right back into the whole emotional thing, I'd assume. Yeah.
You know, the fear, you know, now I have two kids at that time. Two kids, a clinic to run, and fear took over. You know, it was like everything that was going on in my life. It was not, I will say, not emotionally strong to support it. And never took the time back in 2005 to grieve the loss of my dad. I just went into, I've got to take over. I got to take care of the clinic. I've got, you know, bills are coming up. Yeah.
Yep.
And you know, that was a mistake in my part of not listening to your emotion side, you know.
Yeah. Well, and now, cause like, I really like this podcast for learnings, right? Because we want to kind of take other people's experiences and then maybe give it, cause there'll be some young chiropractors that might go through something similar to you. So what would you think was your biggest learning from that time of your life?
I would say it's okay for a man to have emotions.
Yeah.
You know, to admit that you fear.
Mm-hmm.
To admit that you don't know everything.
Yeah.
And you know, that it's okay to be scared and to talk about it, you know, to have a support group. You know, my support group was Parker, was the BBs, and but I didn't, you know, I wanted to be the strong Maxim, the strong guy that can handle everything. But deep inside of me, I was, you know,
he was hurting,
putting a mask, you know, I was scared. I was worried and I was not talking about those emotions. And, you know, if you don't talk about those emotions, they're going to come and bite you up in the back and hit you harder than you going to expect, you know?
Totally. It's like if you store it away, it comes back with a vengeance even further down the road, right?
Yeah.
So would you recommend then, like anyone out there, if they're feeling like you were, is to ask for help? Like, would you say ask for help, or would you just say talk to somebody?
Both.
Yeah.
Both, you know. You cannot, if there's a situation you cannot handle all by yourself, you know, talk to someone. You know, there's the chiropractic family is a big family, and there's always support groups to understand what you're going through, you know, to share your feelings, you know, and a story from your book, it's okay to ask for help, you know, and it's okay to seek help.
Yes.
To deal with every situation in your life. And, you know, asking for help is not a sign of weakness. It's a sign of being strong. And that's something, that's a lesson I learned from that, you know, crash in 2007, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we always say anytime there's something to go sideways in life, it's never really a loss unless we don't learn anything. Yeah. And hopefully we don't do the same thing over again. So you come out of that 2007, and then tell me a little bit about what happened next into the next phase of your practice.
2008, 2009, 2010 were pretty good. Then 2010, my relationship with the mother of my kids was not going strong, so I kind of separated from, became a single dad.
Yeah.
Also moved the clinic to another location nearby, so that was, you know, actually it was a good experience in moving the clinic. Mm-hmm. Then ran the clinic basically like a good year, no regular chiropractic clinic from 2010 to 2016. And then that's where in 2000, I will say 16, 17, I lost the fire again, you know, and which led me to the end of 2017 and this year to join the shift.
To join this vitality shift. Now, what do you think was the fact, what some of the factors that caused you to lose the fire in like 2016,
17? I would say the mechanistic way that we are, you know, I'm going to say, quote, forced to practice in Canada.
Yeah.
You know, I totally lost focus that, you know, there's a person behind the sciatica that's coming in or the neck pain that's coming in, you know? And
yeah,
I was like, okay, it's a, you know, the mentality that the subluxation is a bad word in our profession right now. And it was like, okay, now I have a sciatica patient. It's going to be another SI lesion, another positive Fabry Patrick test, you know? I was like, and I was always, and I forgot that behind that, it's a mother who cannot raise her kids, who cannot go outside and jog running. And yes, totally forgot about that. And I became a mechanistic chiropractor talking a vitalistic, you know, my views were, I'm a vitalistic chiropractor, but my procedure were mechanistic. And right, I got lost in that, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, in 2017, I had a board complaint. So that, you know, affected me a lot.
Yeah.
Because I was, you know, trying to navigate being vitalistic and
having mechanistic at the same time, way. Right? Yeah. So yeah, it's congruency, and, right? That was probably a little bit out of balance.
I didn't know how to place myself, you know. And we need to be licensed.
Yep.
We need to stay licensed.
Yep.
But how do we navigate that? And it became frustrating for me, and I let those frustration took over.
You know, yes. And
I was coming to the clinic, clocking in and clocking out, and hey, money was coming in every month. You know, everything was going fine, but no fire, no, you know, no passion.
Right.
And I was seeing Brandy post on her Facebook, and I was like, I want to do that. I want to do what they're doing, you know, and that's why I joined the shift at the end of the year. I was like, you know, I want to join in, you know.
Yeah, I think we opened it just because of you.
Yeah, probably. I was like, I was seeing the post and I missed the first group for the shift. And I think at the end of the year, I started to post and I think I posted something like, here's my credit card number, you know, open it. And you guys did, so.
Which was hilarious because we were actually, at the time, we were in Canmore for New Year's.
Okay.
And me and Brandy were working out at the gym, and I think you'd said something like, I really want this. And I said, let's just open it up for like basically 24 hours so that Max could get in. Because he's like, because you're so excited about, because we weren't planning on opening it for two more months. And so, yeah, so it's hilarious. So I actually, on my phone, I opened it up while I was sitting on the bench press machine in the gym.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's pretty funny. So tell us a little bit about your experience joining the Vitality Shift.
Well, I like I said, I joined probably between New Year's and Christmas and New Year's. And, you know, the first week, everybody's not back. So the first couple of days in January, I think I watched all the modules during those first days. You know, I was so excited. And at the same time, I was reading your book also. So
yes,
I'd advise everyone, get your book. You know, it's a great, great book to read. So the experience, I went in, you know, I got to the first module, then the second one, the third, with all the vitality tests, and I just jumped on it and did all the tests, you know, all the module, and started implementing things. You know, the big difference for me was the hierarchy of vitality and the healing archetypes, you know.
Yes.
And it's so funny because, you know, as a chiropractor, I was, through my experience, I was always finding a way to explain why two people with the same condition respond differently to care, you know?
Yeah.
Why someone will have great results in 10, 12, 14 adjustments and someone's going to take 30, 36 to get the same results.
Yeah.
And the answer is the healing archetypes.
Yes. You know?
And the way it is presented, the way it is so easy for us to understand and then for the patient to understand, you know? Because they always ask the same question, you know, how long is it going to take?
Totally. And
to be honest, we don't know that answer.
Yes.
We don't know that answer at the first visit. We don't know that answer at the second visit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We only see that person once. We did the test on them. And then we need to tell them how long it's going to take when we don't know them.
Right.
And the healing archetypes for me were making so much sense. And I started implementing in the clinic and patients started understanding them. The kitchen sink also, it's a nice visual. It's so funny because we translated it to French. So If anyone wants it in French, give, you know, they can get in touch with you or me and we'll send it a copy.
Yeah.
And so just explaining, you know, the implementing the kitchen sink and did the personality test also from the book that really helped me understand, you know, who I was and why I was acting like that. And then just I need to, you know, tweak a couple of things and also started implementing also the love language, you know, from the posture to stress and,
yes,
as you know, are the Arbat structure. And it's funny because when you do the test, and when you do the test, you know, right now when my patients are coming in right now, or my new patient, I'm like, okay, this is a posture language. This is a healing architect one. No, that patient is a four, you know. It's no longer, oh, this is a sciatica patient. This is a four. This is a three. This is a two.
Yeah, yeah.
A healing archetype. So I'm having fun right now in clinic, you know, or now I can know that this person is, you know, they're about posture. That person is about stress. That posture is about, you know,
function and all that
function
stuff.
Function, like everything. So,
that's so cool.
It's funny.
That's awesome. And so I think kind of one of the things is that, and everyone out there, Dr. Max is a lab and I've reviewed some of the personality stuff. If you haven't got my book, the lab is the amiable who like really connects with other people and needs connection, which is why when you were hurting before and you're disconnecting from everybody, you felt empty because you thrive off connection, right?
Yes, actually.
Yeah. And so when you learn how to communicate with other people and you need to, and you learn how to connect those deeper connections, it actually, that's part of lighting the fire. I think that was probably what lit the fire inside you again, because you're like, now I'm connecting really, really good with people.
I would say funny because my first threat is a lab and my second one is the ant. So I need to connect with people and then I need to understand why I need to connect with people.
Right. You're so analytical. You want to figure all that stuff out, right?
Yeah. And you know, funny because I say, I did a couple of like what quality are important for you. And I say, you know, my number one quality is harmony. And then one of my biggest, you know, and harmony as a positive value and then as a negative value, you know, when you're sacrificing your own beliefs for the sake of harmony.
Yep.
That's a problem. And when you're doing in the clinic, whether you're doing with the patients, whether you're doing in your personal life, you know, where you want to be a lovable guy, so you always settle.
Yes.
And then you get, you know, you always settle. And then you get to the point where you're with your girlfriend and you're like, well, you always win, you know?
Yeah. And then you feel empty. You feel empty, right? Because you're just never even thinking about what you like to do, right? Because you're just so concerned with just kind of the status quo and let's not have any conflict and let's have everybody get along, but at the sacrifice of your own soul.
Totally. You know, it's like when I'm, you know, it's even realizing something when I'm dating right now, you know, and let's go out for dinner. I want to be with the girl. I don't care if we eat steak or chicken, you know?
Yeah.
You just want to be with someone. And then she asks you, what do you like to eat? And it is still just giving an answer to steak or chicken, it's still hard for me. Why if I give the wrong answer, you know?
Yes.
And I was like, you know, it's so funny because now I'm realizing it. And then if I do that in my personal life, what do I do in my clinic life?
Right.
You know, do I always settle with a patient? Do I go, well, he needs 24 visits and he'll probably need 6 months of care, but I'm only going to do the basic, oh, let's treat you 3 to 4 times and see how it goes, you know?
Right. Yeah. That is funny because that was what I used to do when I was first in practice too, because I'm a lab, but I'm a dolphin. So I'm like a chattier, but I still need that connection. But like, I would always be worried. Exactly. You're always worried you're not going to be accepted. So we'd be like, well, let's see you a couple times. Well, let's see, like see a couple times a week for a few weeks and then we'll see how it goes, because you never close the loop. Right. And I think that's the key thing that helps with our personality style is that it's a little bit uncomfortable up front, but if we can make an agreement or we can close the loop, and in chiropractic care, whether they accept our ideal recommendations or they accept a modified care plan, as long, or they don't take care,
as long as we close that loop, it's a lot less stressful than not closing it and then wondering and trying to go to sleep at night thinking in your brain, what are they doing? Or are they going to stay under care? It's exhausting.
And it's funny because now with the hierarchy of vitality, you know, the first step is interruption, mobilization, and then we need interruption.
Yeah.
And patients look at it in my report of findings and they understand the first two parts. But then they see that we need the next two, the restoration and the integration. And they realize, you know, there's another step and it makes sense to them. You know, first, the first series is to stop what's going on. And then there's another series of adjustment to introduce what needs to be introduced. So they understand, you know, and they are excited to go to the first series of care. And then they understand that, you know, there's probably going to be, after the first re-exam, there's going to be another steps. And it makes sense to them, you know. So any doctors that are listening to this program are fans about the shift, you know, it makes explaining what we do so easy for the patients.
Yeah. Well, and again, and then the top part is the great part, right, is the connection and creation. And that takes effort in order to keep our body in kind of harmony, homeostasis, optimizing function. So that's, I call that the quality of life area, because that's where we want to keep people, is up in that top realm of that hierarchy of vitality, which is that connection and creation. And again, I want to be in that, like, that's why I stay under care. I want to experience that for my life, right? And stay in that zone.
Absolutely.
That's cool. So you mentioned you got the book, Breaking or The Underdog Curse. And yes. I was wondering if you could just share a couple of things that you got out of that book.
It really helped. I said this book was written for me, you know, probably have a lab and you wrote the book for other lab people to say that's why you are, why you need to get the approbation of others, or you need to have to please everyone. So it just make the book helped me realize who I was and why was I thinking like that. So that was probably the biggest lesson, and not to be afraid to speak your truth. You know, the danger that you went through and all that happened because you were always nice to everyone. And if you don't speak your truth, you know, you're not helping yourself in the long run. Mm-hmm. That's probably the biggest lesson I learned from it, you know. And also that there's four types, you know. There's the alpha wolf, there's the dolphin, there's the hand, and you know, different personalities are going on. And like I said, you know, now when I meet people, I can say, well, this person is a alpha, this person is a dolphin. And you know, you need, like I said, it's important to have a dolphin CA at your front desk, and may I, if you have one, and why an NCA will not be good at front desk, or will be good with bookkeeping, you know, and
getting kind of the right people in the right seats, right?
And so, but you know, personally, the book for me just made me realize why was I thinking like that, and why it's important to express my feelings, to express what I want, to not fall back into my lab pleasing mode, basically.
That's awesome. Now part of in the shift in our closed group, we had a little competition. Well, it was a fun competition, but we did that. We did a webinar based on project goal setting, based on the inputs, not just setting goals based on the outputs. And you were one of our top people we picked, because you got a lot of stuff done in January. So maybe if you could share with some listeners some of the projects that you took on in January.
Project I took on in January, watch modules, basically, of the Vitality Shift, read the book, followed your Sunday morning coffee webinars, you know.
Yeah.
which everyone should listen to. It's so funny to, you know, I make sure to have extra coffee on Sunday morning, drink coffee with you guys. Now, to do the module, you know, to do the work, what really, really helped me was that, I want to say project setting or goal setting module that you guys gave in January, where you basically said, you know, the house is the end results. The blueprints of the house is what you need to do to get the house moving. So it just helped me switch, you know, my goals, because I was always setting goals at the end of the year for the following year, or, you know, doing quarterly goals and 6 months goals. And, you know, like one of my goals to spend time with my kids. Well, still true now, will still be true next quarter, still be true, you know, at the end of the year. And so I was always hard on myself, saying, well, my goals are not short-term goals. But then you guys realize, which made me realize, no, the blueprint.
Like, how are you going to spend time with them?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I can say, well, I'm going to do this month, I'm going to spend time every Thursday with them. I'm going to go out and have a family dinner.
Yeah.
I do that. So that's the blue step. That's the step. That's a room. You know, the house is to spend time with your kids or family.
Yeah.
The blueprint is a tiny step that you can do, you know, and then just, you know, translated the kitchen sink to French. Because in Quebec City, basically, everybody speaks French. And so I did that. Now I'm working on translating the archetypes in French to explain them to my patients.
Cool.
And just at the module, you know, and you mentioned reading the book about the 12-week year. I read the book in February. Now I'm in the process of reading another book that you guys mentioned, Blue Ocean.
Yes, the Blue Ocean Strategy.
Yeah, it's a just started book, so it's an amazing book, you know. So did follow what you guys mentioned to do, and yeah, you know, you and Brandy are in practice, you know, you're going through what we're going through every day in our practice, you know, you're in the trenches also, so that's for me, you know, you guys are going to what we're going through in Canada, and it's probably the same thing for our international listeners, you know, you are day to day in practice, you are dealing with people. I'm sure the people in Alberta are the same in Quebec, they're going through the same issues, they're the same in Texas, they're the same in probably, you know, UK, yeah. New Zealand, Australia.
Yep.
We're in a people business. We're in an emotion business. You know, we're not into a condition business.
Right, crack and back business.
No, we're not. You know, when you realize that, you know, it all goes back to, you know, there's an emotion behind the pain they're coming through. Because, you know, we have lots of patients that come to see us with. Have back pain. It's been going on for five, 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Why are they calling today to book an appointment? Why are they, you know?
Right.
There's something behind that, you know, and it's always back to an emotion and activities that they are, you know, they cannot do because of what's going on with their life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because when I ask them, you know, ask my patient, more and more are telling me they want to restart doing their activities again. They want to go start walking again. They want to go play with their kids. They're doing swimming, and they want to go swim again. Mention pain.
Yeah.
They don't want the pain they want the pain to go away, but, you know, if they want their activity back, they want their social life back. And if we focus on that, then the shift is happening that we're back to a people business, treating sick patients, you know. They know that the medical community is a number, you know. I'm sure medical doctors in Canada, in Alberta, you know, in Quebec, it's a big, big, big issue right now, the way the healthcare system is, you know, and they're always on TV. Always issue. There is long waiting lists in hospitals. There are long waiting lists to see a medical doctors.
Yeah.
They're doing with the condition business. We're doing with the people business.
Right.
And if we don't lose that track, if we keep focusing that we are seeing a human being in our clinic, we are changing lives. You know,
that's
and
cool.
It all goes back to our practice was in the 80s and 90s, and whereas I was with my dad, you know, he was helping people. He was not treating condition. He was not treating pain. He was helping people. And, you know, that's what, you know, I forgot in my years of practice.
Right.
For X, Y reason, you know, we're forced to do tests on patients. We're forced to do mechanistic things that are probably not aligned with our values. Mm-hmm. But if we, you know, I lost that focus about the people and I got it back.
Yeah.
Thanks to the chef, and I'm having fun in my practice.
That's cool. And I think because you'd had a question there in our group about being frustrated having to do the orthopedic tests and stuff like that too, which is very interesting because we've had that before. We still need to keep our practice, right? So whatever the standards are in each individual area, you want to keep doing, you want to do those because again, we can't help people if we're not actively licensed. But then all the vitality stuff that we do is just added on top of it. And actually it was really interesting when I was talking to a couple of presidents of chiropractic schools is that if you're a chiropractic school, you need to hit CEE or CCE requirements. So there's certain requirements that they need to meet, which are a lot very mechanistic. And so more of the vitalistic schools, they have to add on top of it. So if you were just going to be a plain mechanistic school, you could just teach exactly what is base required to keep accreditation. But then the vitalistic schools have to do that. Plus they have to add on top of it. And I think the same thing we need to do in our practice, we still keep our base, the orthopedic tests and stuff like that. We need to keep for our bookkeeping, but then we just add the extra stuff on top of it.
Yeah. You know, and for me that answer was like, you know, it's like, I understand what you're saying. I'm frustrated too about that, but we don't have a choice. So just do it. You know, it was like, okay, at least I have someone else who understands my frustrations, you know?
Totally. Then, well, you know, unless you do it the really hard way and get a whole bunch of people to go on your board and then change all the rules, but that's a lot of energy
we can't do that. It won't happen.
Yeah. Well, and again, it's still important to go on the board, but I think in the short term we can still create great impact. Treat each person as a human being, right? And create a bigger vision for them and create hope for them. And then still do our paperwork good. So we can still do both.
Yeah. Just have to do the paperwork, you know, like you said, you know, do the tests and, you know, just do a couple of tests and the major one, and then have fun, you know, have fun with the vital signs, you know, and it's so fun. It's fun to see people, you know, doing the turn tests and realizing why they were moving forward and why they're turning to the left or to the right. And to see their eyes opening when they do the Rongler's test, the single leg Rongler's test, you know, and they are like, well, eyes closed. Why did I feel eyes closed? You know, well, your eyes not control your posture, you know.
Yeah.
That indicates that you have issues going on with the top of your neck, your first couple of cervical vertebrae.
They're subluxated.
You're subluxated. You know, that's the proof. And it's opening eyes in the patients that they are more than we can do, that even if they come back with a, like, I'm having fun doing the test on my patient with low back pain. And they think, oh, I'm just coming back with like a low back pain. And then they move forward and they turn when doing the turn test. And it's like, then why did I move? And the conversations is switching to, well, there's other issues and going on with you than just your back pain or just your neck pain. And now they want, you know, patients want to be normal. They don't want to turn. They don't want to move forward. You know, if we tell them they need to stay on the T of the turn test, they don't want to move.
Yeah.
And when you do the report of findings, they remember now. Because like I said, they remember the last time on Monday, we did the test return. It's like, oh, yeah. Why? Then you're asking the question again. Why did you do that again? And then I do the report of findings and I say, you know, we're the first 12 visits. We're going to do the first 12 visits and then we're going to retest. And they're like, okay, cool. So there's no, to get an agreement for the first 12 visits is so easy right now just because of the vital signs, you know. Mm-hmm. And they understand, like I said earlier, they understand that there's going to be probably more than 12 visits because there are issues that are going to come up. There's issues that are going to resolve quickly. And there are things that are going to, you know, take longer to to correct and just make fun in practice, you know.
That's so cool. That's awesome.
And also what I like is that I now screen a little bit easier my patients. So, you know the ones that come in and they want, sorry for the terms, but they want to crack me here, crack me there, and I want to leave, you know.
Right.
I don't waste time anymore, and I don't get frustrated. I know they're not the right patients for me, you know. They're the one that comes in because of ads that I run, but they're not the ones for me.
Right.
So, you know, okay.
So you become a little bit more selective of who would be a right fit for your office.
Yes, and I don't get frustrated. I don't lose negative energy.
Yeah.
You know, I think the shift made me realize, you know, if there's like 48 patients out of 50 that gets results, mm-hmm. and you spend your energy on the two that don't get results, mm-hmm. you know, I was a doctor that was, why those two don't answer? And it just, you're focusing on negative stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Focus on the 48 that do gets it. 48 that do come, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Even for the report of findings, you know, we have 10 people book and there's only 4 that shows up. Oh, there's 6. And we, you know, I stopped doing that instead of focusing on the 4 that were here, that were there, you know, that took time out of their day to come to your health talk.
Yeah.
To listen to your health talk. And those 6 other patients, you know, they didn't want to hear it, whatever reason, but those 4 that were there, if they get it, and then because they came in, they bring you each one more patient.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and those 4 bring another one, another one. That's how you build your practice. You know, it's like focus on the ones that do get it.
That's and cool.
You realize that, you know, we need in our practice positive energy. You know, yeah. We're surrounded by negative energy, and from the world outside, what's going on in today's society, get as much positive energy as you can surround yourself with. And that's how you're going to build confidence and you're going to build your energy, because we are in an energy fun practice, but we also are in an energy draining practice.
Right, depending, you know, which way you focus on, right? It can suck it or it can create it.
We're going to have patients that are going to drain our energy. And, but we need patients to bring it up, and we need ways to lift our energy up. And if you do that, you make it a lot easier on yourself.
That's awesome. So in closing, I always like to give a couple of minutes to my podcast guests just to give any words of wisdom or last parting thoughts to all the chiropractors that are be listening all around the world. Some of them feel like underdogs. Some of them are. Some of them might have been through a difficult situation. What kind of words of wisdom do you have for them?
Words of wisdom. Read The Underdog Curse. No, seriously, you know, read the book. The book really helped me. It's a fun book to read. It really helped me understand lots of things going on in my life and why I was acting like that. Surround yourself with chiropractors that lift you up, you know, whether it's a provincial organization or a group on Facebook. Sometimes when we're alone in our practice, we can let emotion and frustration take over us. So get on Facebook. There's groups, you know, that surround yourself, and don't be afraid to speak what's going on with you, you know, because there's probably another colleague in another clinic somewhere in the world that have the same frustration that you or the same issues that's going on. And we're not alone in this world. And just to be surrounded by people is helps a lot, and support is important in our lives.
Yes.
And get that support and, you know, have fun in your practice. And lastly, I would say, you know, if for those that are on the fence of buying or joining the Vitality Shift program, do it. You know, it's it lit my fire back, and it would lit yours. And, you know, if you have a question, you know, I'm always in the group, always commenting on posts and encouraging others. Look, I'm a second generation chiropractor, and I crash, you know. Even if I grew up in a profession, even if I grew up around Parker seminars, even if, you know, I went to Parker seminars, I was surrounded by, you know, Gilles Lamarche, Rick Wren, Eugene Orlowski, my first speaker at Parker, teaching me how to give a proper handshake, you know.
Yeah.
I was surrounded by all the most successful chiropractors in the profession, and day-to-day life and day-to-day practice got to me, and I crashed, you know. I was a chiropractor that was clocking in and clocking out. And I did that. And thanks to the chef, I'm having fun again in practice. You know, I'm having that fire back, that energy back. And, you know, I'm always there to help other DCs, other chiropractors. So in the group, you know, come talk to me. I'm easy to find on Facebook. I'm easy to find in the chef. And, you know, let's lift fires together. Let's transform the profession together with the chef. You know, like your wife says, you know, we are the solution, you know, with all that's going on in today's world with kids, with adults, you know.
Yeah.
I'm having, it's sad that it's, you know, when I have a young female right now that comes into the clinic, that the antidepressant or anxiety is always checking, you know. 15 years ago, it was rare. Now it's common. And, right. You know, we have, it's funny, we have kids on ADHD medication in class, and the teacher is under antidepressant, anti-anxiety drugs.
Right.
So we have a teacher on drugs for depression, anti-anxiety, teaching to kids who are
on drugs.
On drugs.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, because my son is on the spectrum, and I had courage to the teacher, to one of his teachers, you know, wanted to put my kids on the medication. And I said, well, I'll do it if you leave your medication, because I don't want a drug teacher to teach my kid, you know. And but it's sad, you know, we live in society where, gosh, you know, we have 20-year-old female, 30-year-old female on anti-anxiety and antidepressant. You know, the first struggle in life that's happening. You know, it's the quick answer is to go on drugs.
Yeah.
Wow. No, it's sad. And we are the answer to that. We are the answer to change at the nervous system function, you know. And because I think I like the quote from the U.S. speaker, you know, that Rocky Balboa speech to his son, you know, that life is not always sunshine and rainbow.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And you got to be willing to take the hits and keep moving forward, you know. Your sink will always be filled with water.
Yep.
You know, that's a fact of life. Your sink will always be filled with water. Our responsibility is to drain that sink.
You betcha. You know,
day in, day out to drain that sink. Chiropractic can help. We can remove what's blocking the sink. But, you know, patients have to do their part too. But, you know, our job is to unclog the drain in our patients, and it's not about the pain, it's not about their condition, it's about unclogging their drain so that their nervous system can handle their stress in their life.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Well, I want to thank you so much for being on the podcast, and congratulations, because it's tough to come back from two crashes, and it's really rewarding for us to see someone like you now back on fire. On the tools, helping people out. So good job on all that.
Well, thank you very much.
So everybody, I think that was a pretty inspirational interview there. So if you've been having a hard time, that was some good examples of someone else that had a hard time, but they still pulled themselves around. So make sure, ask for help if things are tough. Don't be all quiet and secluded, because that's one of the first things we do when we're feeling depressed is we disconnect. With others, and when it's really important to connect and surround yourself with like-minded people, and like always, get out there and crush the curse.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you receive value from this episode, please take some time to rate and review us on iTunes or your favorite place to listen to podcasts. If you know a fellow chiropractor that could benefit from this message, please share it with them. Because it's my goal to provide you with great content, please contact me if you have any questions at drdonmcdonald.com or find me on Facebook. I look forward to hearing from you. So until next time, Dr. Don out.